Let's be good tonight.
Hi, here. I'm Julie Shepherd. I'm an alcoholic. And, of course, very nervous right now. And let me tell you how I got up here, besides being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Amanda, at the first of the month, knew she wasn't going to be here, so she called Bill and I and asked us if we would chair, one of us would chair the meeting for tonight. And Bill was like, well, I'm not going to chair unless I know who's speaking. So, of course, that was Amanda's opening to ask me to speak. Have you ever spoken? So I think it was a setup all along, really. But anyhow, I'm here. Yeah, ta-da. Anyhow, I don't know if this is going to work in the mess of... Okay, so anyhow, that's how I got here. And I just want to tell the people that knew that Julie S. was Julie Shepherd and showed up to support me. I really appreciate that because I never had people like that when I was drinking. And not for a long time in sobriety, too. I kept myself shut off from reaching out and trying to be a loving member of society or Alcoholics Anonymous out of fear. And I know that, you know, with fear running my life, there was definitely an absence of love in God in my life, and that was from a very young age. So I can tell you that my alcoholism, or I was born with it. You know, I was just waiting till taking the first drink. You know, I had all the isms from a very young age, and I can remember, you know, what it was like and what happened and what it's like today when I grew up and when I was real young, turning my back on God. You know, I can vividly remember that time when I used to pray. You know, I used to go to church and really get a lot out of it. And then at the age of five, the ripe old age of five, I was praying to have God remove me from this where I grew up. I mean, there was so much pain and so much dysfunction when I was growing up, and I was already seeing a psychologist at the age of five. And that's not any different than a lot of people grow up. I wasn't any special or unique or anything. But when I asked God to remove that pain or put me somewhere else like the Cleaver family, and he didn't, then I decided that God didn't work for me. So I didn't stop praying. I still went to church all my life, and I still tried to live what I thought was the right way, but just didn't know what that was. You know, I felt like when I was growing up, and even still today sometimes, I look at other people and think, you just have it figured out. What am I missing? I feel like I'm missing out, like people, you know, have the rules, and I missed out. And that was from a very young age, too. So, like I said, I grew up in a little dysfunctional family, and it functions the way it needs to, and that's not why I'm an alcoholic, but that's certainly where I got the ideas of who I thought I was. You know, I grew from, like I said, from a very young age too. I had my spirit smashed, you know, and I don't know if anybody understands that, or I know you have to, or you wouldn't be here probably. And I had, you know, my self-esteem taken from me, and I didn't know that I could, like I said, I didn't know I could reach out and have that restored, or that there was a power greater out there that could help me through that. I just didn't. At the age of five, I mean, that's, or even younger than that, those were the ideas I grew up with, that, you know, what I was told, you know, I wasn't ever going to amount to anything, and of course being small didn't help. You know, I was always berated for being my size, and not just in my family but outside. And I didn't take any more ribbing than a lot of people take in school, but I know we alcoholics are the most loving, passionate, sensitive people. And somebody saying one little thing out of line, and I could carry on with that for 30 years. I could hold on to that, you know? And so I did. I ran with that kind of stuff, and kids could be cruel, and I didn't have anywhere to go to cry and to feel that pain, and to have somebody to comfort me and say that stuff's not true. So it was like wherever I reached out, it just wasn't, you know, there wasn't anybody there. I didn't feel like, and like I said, I already turned my back on God, so that wasn't an option. And, let's see, I was really young, actually, when I had my first taste of alcohol, because I was one of the babies where my, you know, rubbed the rum on my teeth so I wouldn't feel the pain of teething. So I got the taste really early, and the first time I had my first can of beer was I was 5, and my dad and I just got done doing a hard day's work in the yard, and so we were all hot, and so we each grabbed the beer, and I drank it, and man, I loved it from the first sip that hit my lips. I loved the taste, I loved the effect, I loved everything, and at that age, I knew I couldn't wait till I got to taste it again, till I got to have it again. And I know I've heard other people say the same thing, you know, right from the get-go, I knew. And I knew that it made me feel totally different. It made me feel like the person that I knew deep down inside I wanted to be, but I didn't know how to get there. I didn't. So, that's what I drank for the rest of the time I drank, was to get to that point where I could shut the voices off that told me I was this, you know, I was never going to amount to anything, because I know now from my spiritual life now that deep down we all know that we are perfect and we are a spirit, you know, and God gave us that, but somehow life gets in the way and messages get in the way, and I know I looked in the bottom of a bottle and a lot of drugs to shut those voices up down and to just numb out. There's drugs in my story because, I mean, they were just easier to get. You know, I was a daily drinker by the time I was 14, and a drug user because, like I said, it was easier for me to get. I mean, when I was 14, I certainly didn't look like I was 21 and old enough to drink. So, but I still, you know, I could go into bars because my sister was a bartender, but I could get drugs really easily, and it just got me to where I wanted to be. So, but a drug never happened without me taking my first drink. So the drink always preceded anything I did after that. And just after a while, it didn't work. Alcohol, I couldn't drink enough to get me to where I wanted to go fast enough. So, let's see, I was about 10 or 11 the first time I had a blackout, and I passed out. And it was with my family at a family party, and it was just always okay to drink at those functions. It didn't matter how old I was, you know, 8, 9 years old, I was drinking, I was grabbing alcohol or, you know, beer out of the cooler just like, you know, the grown-ups, and I loved that. I loved when my parents went out to family parties, and because that was my opportunity. Other than that, I had to steal my alcohol from my mom and dad. And all they didn't drink. All they had was some kind of really nasty stuff, but I had alcohol and it didn't matter. So I drank it, and I wasn't smart enough to put water in it, because I'm like, I'm drinking this. I don't want to water it down. So, but it didn't matter, because like I said, the dysfunction in my family is if there's an elephant in the living room, we're not going to talk about it. So that's the biggest problem in my family. Yeah. And I was the elephant too. So anyhow, like I said, I had my first blackout at about that age, and you know, I still was certain that I always knew that there was a God. I knew that. I believed that from my upbringing. You know, I went to church every Sunday. I did the whole thing the Lutheran church does, catechism and all that, and Sunday school, and I was really, you know, I was active in church and choir and all that, but it just didn't feel right. I just never felt it deep down. So I just went through the motions, and I wasn't the kind of person. I had maybe one or two friends growing up. I was a real wallflower. I was shy. Yeah, there was one time I was shy. And there wasn't a whole lot of outlets for me to be able to, if I was going through anything, for me to reach out. So again, I ended up about that age when my mom and dad started seeing me coming home all the time, like 12, 13 years old, at 1 o'clock in the morning, stumbling in the house, and they just didn't know what to do. They were totally incapacitated they weren't sure what to do. They had already had a son that was also a daily drinker. And so, I mean, what do you do with a 12-year-old or 13-year-old little girl, baby, coming in your house, stumbling and falling up the steps. I mean, what do you do? So they took me to counseling again. And I was out of school for about 2 weeks one time. I was about that same age, 12 or 13. And they were treating me for stress. So, and I didn't know about that. I don't remember that. I black out memories. I blacked out whole years of my life. The only way I knew that is when my daughter went to the same pediatrician that I went to. We checked on my files and that came up. And that was like, wow, you know, I missed like 2 weeks of school on, not on medication, but just on bed rest because I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep. And I mean, there's some reasons for that. I know what it is now. But the biggest reason I know now is that I couldn't reach out. You know, I just couldn't, I didn't have what I have now. I didn't have people to talk to and people that could understand where I was coming from and could understand my language. And so I was about around 15, that age, 16, I was one of the runaways. You know, I would run away for the weekend and plan on running away forever and got caught. And the police would come and pick my car up and I'd be left wherever. Well, it was L.A., we called it, Lower Akron. But it's still, it was a bad neighborhood. it was not a nice place because I came from a little white bread neighborhood. You know, I was in places where, you know, I wouldn't end up now, but or I'd be afraid to go now. And I just didn't care, you know. I was just rebelling against everything, against what my parents thought I was supposed to be, against, you know, whatever it was. It was just a lot of pain. I was crying out for help. Now I know that, but like I said, they didn't know what to do. So I was that age. I was about 16 the first time I went to treatment. And got thrown out from a bad attitude. Yeah, the sweet girl you see right now. Yeah, big, you know, dirty mouth, whatever. I talked like a sailor. And just a bad attitude. I went to treatment because my parents gave me an ultimatum. I could either get thrown out on the street, pretty much, or go to treatment. And I'm not a camper. I can't camp in a tent. You know, so I there's no way I knew I couldn't survive out on the street, so I chose to eat what I thought was the easier, softer way. Little did I know that that was really the easier, softer way. That was started me on my path, you know, of discovery. And I wasn't serious at that time. I got thrown out of that treatment center and went to another one and then another one, and I finally graduated high school in treatment. So I didn't get it then. I didn't do anything that I was supposed to be doing, because when people started talking about you have to open up and get a sponsor and ask for help and do these steps, and that step four where I was going to tell anybody any of my thoughts, that just was like, I'm just not going to do that. And the whole idea of God, you know, I already had my mind made up about what God was going to do for me, you know, and that was essentially nothing, you know. Because I had that childlike faith, like I was going to ask for something and be given the answer the way I wanted it. And it took me a long time in recovery to get away from that immature attitude about God and that spirituality, or that idea. And so what it did do when I was that age, going to treatment, was plant a seed for me to come back later. And I never didn't know I was an alcoholic. I mean, I grew up with a girl, my best friend, and I have been best friends for about 37 years, since we were in diapers. And she got in the program before me, but we qualified together. I mean, we drank all the time together, and her mom had about 10 years sober when we were younger, and we were like 9 or 10 going to meetings with her. I mean, I never didn't know I was an alcoholic. I knew it. I mean, we would sit in our driveway drinking our case of beer, saying, you know, when we get old, like 30, we're going to get sober. You know? Like, then we'll have lived all our lives that we want to live and party and do all the partying we want to do. But it had ceased being fun long before that. It was definitely a way to cope and to survive. So I went back to my ways. You know, I just wasn't ready for the total honesty and to reach out and get help and all that. And I just wasn't ready. I thought I was too young to be, you know, sober yet. I don't want to give it up yet. You know, it's a little bit too much to ask my best friend, you know, giving up alcohol. So I was still... in that little short time, though, that I was in treatment, we did have to do step work, and that's, I've held on to that for 23 years now. I have it, and once in a while, I'll get it out, like around my anniversary, and read it, and it's just amazing, because I think, you know, at that time, I was really honest, and I let it all out, and I wrote that, I just wrote my pain out, and I know we shared it at that time. At that time, treatment was really pretty abusive. It was this kind of therapy where they just, the shame kind of based therapy. So it was like, I grew up in a household like that and thought I'd escape it and went to treatment like that. And then when I went back out, I just said, I had years terrified. And I would have nightmares about that place. And God loved the people there. They just did what they were trained to do, and they didn't know any better. So I had a bad taste in my mouth for a little while for AA, because that's what I thought AA was. But I found out the treatment's really not AA. They gave me a chance to get away from the homes where I was and get dried out, but where I really got my recovery was coming here and reaching out here. So I was went to college and started on my business degree, and then met somebody that was 6 years older than me, and he was just, he just had really good drugs. So it was like a match made in heaven. And we had a daughter together, so yeah, that was the best thing that came out of that relationship is my daughter. She pretty much saved my life. She's the light of my life now. And let's see, I was 19 when I had her, and was, needless to say, ill-prepared to be a mom. But we grew up together. I mean, I know I made mistakes, and I learned along the way, but we're like best friends. We get along so well together. And but at that time, I was, like I said, I was just kind of thrust into, forced to grow up a little bit and be responsible for somebody else. And I can remember in my mind, like a year before this, I remember that I was starting to pray to God for myself and just saying, either take me out of here, this life, because I didn't want to live anymore, or give me some reason to live. And I had her. And that is all I need. She was my reason to live. And also, she's the reason I came here to get sober. She's not the reason I stay and the reason why I found, you know, that I got the miracle that I was expecting. But she got me here. And so she was about, I was still in the situation where, you know, I left her dad when she was about 6 months old. So then I was a single parent on my own trying to, you know, finish college. I finished college, I think, anyhow. I was still drinking, so I'm not quite sure if I actually have a degree. I could always call Kent State and find out, but I might just have to pay some money and get my diploma. But anyhow, if I do, I have a management degree. Yeah, so anyhow. So needless to say, when the idea of going back to AA and I needed to find out if my life was unmanageable, yeah, I had a really long list already started. So my girlfriend Tanya got sober about a year and a half. She's the one I drank with all my life and grew up with. She got sober about a year and a half before I did. And we used to go out, she'd be reading her big book to me and planting a seed that I didn't know that's what she was doing, but and just praying for me. And I know that the prayers that we do for the people who are still sick and suffering work. Any prayer always works. Any prayer. It just doesn't always work the way we think it's going to. But so I went to my first meeting with her. It was a Wednesday night, and I was a basket case. I mean, I shook the whole time. I cried the whole time, and I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to do this. I can't. So Friday night, I was like, the weekend's coming up. I'm just going to do one more good weekend, and then I'll go back to meetings. And so Friday night, I proceeded to drink a whole bottle and dip into something else. And I was, after probably about, you know, my drink was 151 Ron Rico, about a whole bottle, I was still stone cold sober. I mean, I probably was close to alcohol poisoning, but I was wide awake. I didn't black out like I usually do, because that's what I did. I drank so I could either black out or pass out, because I knew it was coming. I knew it. And that's how I drank for, you know, 14 years, just blacking out. And so I knew it was coming, and it didn't that night. And so, I don't know if maybe it was a prayer from days before where I prayed again to God to take me away, take me out of this life. And when I woke up, I would curse him because he didn't. But I don't know if that one of those prayers got me. And that Saturday morning, it was August 1st, 1992, I woke up and no thought of my own, a thought popped in my head that I'm going to go to a meeting. And I did. That night, somehow I white-knuckled it the day and got to a meeting. It was an 8 o'clock speaker meeting. And in Akron, there's a lot of speaker meetings, and some of them are really big. And I walked into this meeting. Well, I didn't really walk into it. I stood outside, and I waited for somebody to go by, and I asked if this was the AA meeting, even though I knew it was. I was hoping somebody would say, no, it's canceled or something. But Ashley was to be my first sponsor. She said yes, and she literally grabbed my hand and held my hand, walked me into the meeting, sat me down, grabbed me half a cup of coffee, and I don't know how you could tell I was new. You know, I was one of those people with big hair, makeup, whatever made me look like I wasn't new, which really accentuates it. So I'm shaking, you know, and she sat me down, and she sat by me and had her arm around me the whole time while I'm shaking, trying to drink my coffee, and surrounded me with women. She brought women over to meet me, and that first meeting I walked into, there was easily 200 people, and that's Saturday night meeting, speaker meeting. That's how many people were there. And I guess after like about 50, it really doesn't matter at some point. So I don't remember a thing from that meeting other than I got to meet some people, and I got people to shake hands and introduce themselves, and some contact with somebody, you know, physical contact, because my drinking, like I said, I drank, and I was not a pretty drinker at all. I was the kind of person who had to be carried out of the, you know, really not very nice place. You know, I'm in places I wouldn't, like I said, I wouldn't spit on today. Those are the kind of places I loved. The darker, the better, you know, big shots, $1, you know, that was my place to drink. And so I alienated. I mean, I drank to drive people away and to keep people away from me. But when it happened, when I was really to that point of desperation and loneliness that only an alcoholic can feel, I was in pain. You know, I was like, I really craved to be somebody to hold my hand, somebody to reach out and smile at me, and it hadn't happened for a really long time until that night. And maybe it happened the night before when I went to that meeting, like on Wednesday night. I don't know. I wasn't there. That message or whatever it was, that light that comes on wasn't on yet. But that Saturday night, when that just meant so much to me. And that's what kept me here, was the people. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't all the steps. That's what helped me recover, and that's what helped me get better from this spiritual malady and this seemingly hopeless state of mind. That's what did it, but what kept me here was people. they understood and they spoke my language. You know, I could, and like I said, there's a lot of speaker meetings. I really love to go to speaker meetings because that's what helped me stay, was to identify. I could understand, you know, people would talk about their pain, and not only that, they would say at the end of that there's hope. You know, I hadn't felt that way for a very, very long time. You know, I didn't feel any hope when I was out there. And so that was the start of my journey, and it's been bliss ever since. You know, that's why my hecklers are here to make sure I keep it honest. So I did, though, jump right in to the program because I thought that this was it. You know, I mean, I had tried every other route. I'd gone to counseling since I was 5. I mean, it didn't do anything for me. I had gone to the church. I still have a whole bookshelf full of self-help books, and they didn't do anything for me. And I read them, and that's it. Now what? You know, I didn't know yet to practice this stuff. Whatever. So I jumped right in with the sponsor, the lady that walked me in to my first meeting and held my hand. And she wasn't one of those sponsors that sat down and worked the steps with me. And there's no advice I would give, but if somebody's not willing to work the steps with you right away, find somebody that is, because I can't tell you. That is recovery right there, the steps. She wasn't, but one thing I did learn from her is that to sit down and shut up, because you don't know anything. If you did, you wouldn't be here, and so that was great. I didn't want to talk to anybody anyhow. It's like, good. That was it. It was like, take the cotton out of your ears and put them in your mouth. That was the saying she gave me, you know. That was fine with me. I could sit in the back, be a wallflower, soak up a little bit. And she also told me, I never heard 90 and 90. She told me, go to a meeting every day until I tell you you don't have to. And so 365 days later, when it dawned on me that she never told me to stop, but I wasn't going to anyhow. Once I got the fever, I just wanted to go. You know, people said keep going to meetings till you want to, and I wanted to right away. Right away it happened for me. And right away, even when I was starting to do the prayer and starting to do the steps, when I prayed for God to remove that obsession from me, it happened right away. Because at that time I had that childlike faith that if I prayed for it, it's going to happen. And it did. And somewhere along the way, my ego got in the way and said, no, you know, and changed that up. But at that time, I prayed for it and it happened. And I haven't, in 14 years, I haven't had a conscious thought of a drink. I haven't had a conscious thought of a drug. You know, the thought I might have a dream. And I've had conscious thoughts of cigarettes, but that's it. And I can remember, too, when I first got sober, I was a few months sober, and I was working with that sponsor, and I had this dream. It was so vivid that I had been getting high all the time since I got sober, and I just didn't want to tell her. And it was my ego trying to mess with my happiness. You know, I'd finally found some happiness here, and it was my mind saying, no, you're not going to be happy. You know, the mind takes over and does that. And I had the only way I knew it was a dream is that, like, days later I thought, well, where the heck would I have gotten it? Because that is what made me realize I was so terrified to tell my sponsor that I had been using. But I hadn't been, so. Anyhow, yeah, it was so real. I don't think that social drinkers need whatever have those kind of dreams where it's an obsession like that. That sponsor, like I said, she just wasn't really willing to work the steps with me. So there's this guy that pretty much 13th stepped me, so I married him anyhow. Yeah. But he was the first man in my whole life that didn't have to be wasted to tell me I was pretty and to tell me that I was something. the first man ever, and that was enough for me, you know. I'd never had that before, so. And he also worked an awesome, awesome program. So, and he's got like 22, he just celebrated 23 years. Also, when I got sober, when I went to treatment at 16, there was a whole group of people I went to school with in high school that got sober at the same time. There was probably 20-some people, and they still have, they're still sober. They're like my age, and they have 22, 23 years sober. And it's amazing. It's a real testament to the power of we. Because I was going to do it on my own. I ran off, and that's where I got, was out drinking again. So, anyhow, I started diligently working the steps. I jumped right in. I did my fourth step right away. You know, I did the first three steps, like some people have said here, just walking in the door. I know that they're done. You know, I knew that I couldn't do it alone. You know, I tried to. I tried to figure it out on my own for years and knew that I couldn't. So I was really willing to try, just try something different. Just know that, you know, I don't know that I believed what power it was, and I certainly didn't believe that, I didn't want to believe in a God out there somewhere, you know, stirring his magic wand or whatever he does in a white coat or whatever ideas I had when I was growing up. But one thing I did believe in was the power of the spirit in the rooms. And it's been a 14-year trip all the way back to the same thing. That's what I still believe in. So I did my first four step, and it was the novel of me. It was that thick, and God loved the man who had to hear my fifth step. It was a guy from a treatment center up in Ohio. Actually, he did. He worked with a lot of people, and I figured since he was a priest, that he would like absolve my sins right then. And so, but it worked out great because he couldn't talk either. So, you know, he didn't tell anybody, so I could trust him. And about 5 or 6 hours later, when I was giving him my, you know, repertoire of everything, and he had heard hundreds and hundreds of fifth steps before, and had infinite patience and love to give me, and reassured me the whole time that, you know, you're right, doing the right thing, you're on the right path, and giving me little gifts of what this program does, this, you know, little gifts of love. Just, you know, we don't always see it, but he also gave me this awesome book on Sister Ignatia, the biography, because I had a problem with being small. I grew up feeling inadequate, and Sister Ignatia is 4'2", and she was just an amazing woman. She is the saint of Alcoholics Anonymous, so if she can do it, you know. But anyhow, so that was a gift, and then I went home right away and did 6 and 7, just like it says in the big book, and then went on to do my 8th and 9th step. I had my list for my 8th, you know, for my amends, from my 4th step, just like it says in the big book, and started making my 9th step. And I know that, you know, there's a lot of power in the 4th and 5th step, that self-awareness and that, but where I really got this was when I started doing my amends. When I started realizing that the damage that I caused other people, and the hurt and the pain with having, like I said, you know, I was angry at my parents because they let a 13 or 14-year-old walk in drunk and stumble up. And, you know, where was my compassion? I found it then. When I really tried to mend that relationship and say, you know, take my part and my responsibility, I could see the pain that they felt, they let me down, and they didn't. They did what they could do. Their hands were tied. So when I started doing those amends, that's when my life changed. That's when I got here and felt that there was a guy up in Akron who used to say, every single time he spoke, he would end with, don't leave before the miracle happens. And I held on to that saying. And that was the miracle for me. That 9th step, that first time, making amends, being accountable for my part, and trying the best I could to be a good daughter, a good mother, all that. So continuing on with the 10th step, you know, I do 10, 11, and 12 the best I can. You know, there's times when I probably am a better you know, Alcoholics Anonymous member and reach out and do more service work. And I also try as best as I can to, you know, go through my day when I'm doing the 11th step and see where I could have done better, and the next morning ask for God to guide me the best, you know, I'll let Him guide me for the day ahead, and reaching out and helping other people. You know, I try to do that the best I can. It doesn't always just happen for me in Alcoholics Anonymous, though. There's also a part in the big book that says something about, you know, this more will be revealed, and we know only a little, and also that getting recovery is more about just not drinking and just not hurting people. That's not enough for me. I don't want to just not hurt somebody. I want to love somebody. You know, there's a difference. It's a difference in attitude, a change in perspective. That's a big thing for me in Alcoholics Anonymous, putting those glasses on the right way and seeing that I had a terrible perception disorder. And now I had about 3 years sober, and I've heard other people do this too, go through this time, where they, it was like a bottom I hit. You know, I was doing everything I was supposed to be doing, or supposed to be, whatever. All the basics, going to meetings, calling my sponsor, working the steps, you know, reaching out, sponsoring people. And I woke up 3 years sober and wanted to die. Every day I wanted to die. I prayed to God again. Just, if this is how it's going to feel sober, just end it right now for me. That was the bottom I hit, and somebody who was in my life at that time told me that I was at that point. It's like, now your recovery begins. Now it's the real meat and potatoes, get down in there. And the only reason that I was at that point is because I was ready, not because I wasn't doing something right. In my mind, it's like, well, what are you doing wrong now, you know? But it takes somebody outside me to switch that perception for me and tell me that you're ready to deal with this stuff now. And it's been quite the ride ever since then. A totally different perspective on God and my spirituality. It is my life. It's not part of my life. I about 9 years sober, my ex-husband now, my husband and I at that time, and my daughter decided that a change of scenery would be good, and really it was one of those things where it was like a geographical cure in sobriety. And part of it too was that I knew that there was no way I could work through some of the painful stuff that I had to work through, some of the memories I was having that were blocked out by years of blackouts, if I was living up in Ohio. I can't explain why, but I just knew it. I just knew I had to break free from those restrictions of being so close to my family that, you know, I love my family today now. I mean, we have such a great relationship, but at that time, I just knew I needed to do that. So, moved from Akron when I was 34, and, you know, away from my whole support group in AA, away from all my friends that I knew for 30-some years at that point, and, came down here with my ex-husband, my daughter, and I. And so this is 9 years sober. I start going to meetings every single day again just to treat myself like a newcomer, just to reach out and say, I'm new here, I need, you know. And it was 9 years that I really don't believe that I really reached out and showed anybody who I really was, because I was still so afraid that you would run away if you knew what the stuff that was going on up here. I mean, I would scare you with the thoughts that came through my head. And it took me that time to move down here away from my support group, get a divorce, have to buy a house for the first time in my life as a single mom, get a new job. I mean, it was just like everything. My whole world was turned upside down. Some of it was good, you know. Most of it, well, it actually turns out that all of it was right, just the way it was supposed to be. At the time, I didn't know that, but and then, like, months later, lost this great job, lost my income to have this house I bought. I mean, it was just like up and down. I was given this opportunity to move down here. It looked like everything was great. And slowly, but surely, everything was being pulled away from me. And it, you know, my inclination was to say, God, what am I doing wrong now? And it was at that time when I reached out and started getting help from other people and got the answer that I didn't need all that stuff. You know, I really didn't need all that stuff, that true joy and happiness in my life and the true love in my life comes from inside, because that's where God is. And I didn't know that. Like I said, I expected to pray and have this happen, and when it didn't, that was at 9 years sober, I learned that, you know, and I part of me was like, I don't know if I want to tell you, at 9 years I finally got it, but I know people that say at 15 and 20 years that, you know, I finally got it. And that's great. That's like awesome to me, because I need to hear that. Because I, you know, I figured when I looked at people that had 10 years sober, I thought, oh, I'm going to have it all together by the time I'm 10 years sober. Yeah. And no, it's not that way. I mean, I'm just learning how much I don't know. It's awesome. I love this. I love this journey. It's just, it's definitely not what I expected. Not what I expected at all. Thank God. Thank God it's not what I expected, and thank God that I have a lot more than I really limited myself. I just wanted to come in here and learn how to drink like a lady. That's what I wanted to do. And, you know where that went. Anyhow, so the last few years, after I hit about 10 years sober and things started, you know, I'm a single mom again, you know, and my daughter's a teenager, and she's going into her own, and, you know, my spirituality just blossomed. I can't even describe it to you. I don't think I have to. I know that you can feel it. You know that in your own self. You know what that feels like. When there's those days where you just wake up and you're just like, it's another day. This is awesome. And that happens most days when I wake up. It doesn't always end up that day, that way. But it starts out that way. If I can remember to put the person in charge and say, okay, you got it this time, you know. But now I have a whole new chapter of my life opening up. You know, the last couple years has been a big change. My, you know, daughter turned 18 and I cried for a year because I knew she was going to leave me. Like I said, she is the light of my life. So, she went off to go to college, so now I have the empty nest syndrome. And, again, I had to move, so I'm in a new area, in this area, and I have to find a whole new group of people to support me and to reach out and help me and all that. And, just alone, the whole idea of my daughter leaving and being a single mom by myself. I mean, alone, you know, it was the first time in 19 years, because she moved out at 19, that I was alone, you know, single, no baby, nobody to be responsible for, and I took it the way that I know now, since I reached out for help and found out that I was doing it the way everybody does it. You know, I thought it was so, I mean, I was crying. I was like, is this ever going to stop? For Christ's sake, you know, it was all the time. Every morning on the way to work, I was bawling. On the way home, I'm crying. I'm like, there's no way I'm in, you know, menopause yet. I'm not that old. Not yet. But, so anyhow, I just had to reach out. And every time I do that, every time I reach out and say, this is what's going on, I get the answer. I get reassurance that you're right where you're supposed to be. But if I hold it in and I have those secrets, that's when I go crazy. I can't do that anymore. And, like I said, when I did a 180 with my faith and my spirituality and my belief of what God is, you know, when I came in here, I relied on the power of we, and now I do again. You know, it took me a long time, a long journey of pain and trying to find, you know, this can't be this simple, you know, it can't be just like this. There's got to be some way to figure it out, or there's something else that's, you know, there's no way, it's just that much, and your life changes and gets better. And so I did a 180 and I'm back here. And what a power just walking in here, like a year ago when I moved over to Orlando and I had people again. No, you know, I said I was new to the area. People came right up to me, gave them either phone numbers, reached out, just like we always do, you know. We surround those people that are new or not even just new people, in general, you know, people that come in here, we surround them with love. I mean, that's how we get recovery is we all, you know, I know when I was out there, I did nothing love or love-based or kind or out of, you know, peace or true, and, you know, my intentions were to serve me, you know, just because I was filled with so much fear and hate and anger. And, you know, sometimes those feelings rear their ugly heads, and then I can reach out again and just say, this is how I'm feeling. And I always get reassurance, and I always get love back. And I'm really, you know, eternally grateful for what I've received in Alcoholics Anonymous, and especially what's been taken away from me. Because I can look in the mirror today. That's something that I was told when I first got sober, that I was going to be able to do that someday. And I thought, no way, there's no way I'm going to be able to do that. And I can now. I work in a gym, in fact, and there's mirrors all over. And now I'm like, oh, yeah. No. Some days. But, you know, that's okay. A little balance. But anyhow, I just want to thank everybody for being here and for reaching out in love for me all the time. And that's it. Thank you.